You are about to listen to one of what PC Magazine calls the best podcasts of 2018. Check out more about this on our website, and thanks for tuning in. The following episode contains a discussion of sexual violence. Listeners who might be sensitive to such topics, please use discretion. And if you or someone you know is a victim of sexual violence, you can seek safe and confidential help by calling the National Sexual Assault Telephone Hotline at 800-656-HOPE. That's 800-656-4673. The hashtag MeToo movement. It's a huge part of what's happening all around the world right now and in nearly every facet of society. Women the world over are speaking up about their experiences with abuse, inequality, and injustice, and stepping up to make a difference, and with luck, time, and hope, some change to go along with it. Because we all know that things have been wrong for a very, very long time. There haven't been many avenues up to this point for women to make their voices heard, to fight against systems of dominance, repression. But even in the midst of the most trying circumstances and the most harrowing life events, some have been able to stand out and make a lasting statement about their pain, their history, and their wishes for retribution. Some of the best examples of this just happened to be completed in oil paint upon a huge 6-foot canvas. Now that's quite the statement. Some people think that visual art is dry, boring, lifeless. But the stories behind those paintings, sculptures, drawings, and photographs are weirder, crazier, or more fun than you can imagine. Today, we are continuing our all-new series of episodes dissecting single works of art that shook their contemporary worlds with one of the bloodiest, most gruesome works of the Baroque period. And it's all about womanly wrath and awesome revenge. Artemisia Gentileschi's Judith Slaying Holofernes. This is the Art Curious Podcast, exploring the unexpected, the slightly odd, and the strangely wonderful in art history. I'm Jennifer Dassel. Artemisia Gentileschi was born in July of 1593 in Rome as the eldest child of Tuscan painter Orazio Gentileschi and his wife Prudentia Montone. Like many of the female artists that we've discussed in the Art Curious podcast in the past, specifically Elizabeth Vigée Lebrun and Sofonisba Anguissola in episodes 3, 37, and 20, respectively, Artemisia had art-related opportunities that were often off-limits for other women and girls of her time period, simply because she had a dad who was an artist and who was happy to help inculcate his daughter in the ways of art. And so, alongside her younger brothers, she began painting in her father's workshop at a very early age. And her father, Orazio, recognized her talent quickly, and so he capitalized upon it. Orazio decided to give her one-on-one lessons in drawing, color mixing, and painting, and by the time she turned 19, he had already begun boasting about town of his daughter's professional artistic ability, one inspired by another local art great rolling around Rome during this time period, famed Baroque artist Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio, simply known to us today as Caravaggio. Orazio and Caravaggio were close friends, and it is entirely possible that Artemisia herself met and even possibly worked with Caravaggio at some point during her own artistic development. She admired and imitated his stark lighting, his dark and dense color palette, and his choice of biblical subject matter, which, as we'll see, plays a key role in our discussion today. But it wasn't Caravaggio himself that would end up altering Artemisia Gentileschi's life forever. Instead, it was an entirely different artist who would have a long-lasting effect on her and who would directly influence her most famous and infamous painting. It all happened before Artemisia was even out of her teen years. When she was just 17 years old, Orazio hired a new painter to work under his wing, assisting Orazio directly in his commissions and, even more crucially, acting as a painting tutor to Artemisia herself. This man was Agostino Tassi, a man who was a highly rated trompe l'oeil or illusionistic painter in Rome at the time, but whose work is considered fairly unimportant today. But at the time, he was kind of the man, and Artemisia must have been excited that she had the ability to work so closely with him. But she had no idea that she was about to get far, far too close to Tassi, and without her permission. It all seemed so simple and so innocent at the very beginning. On one fateful day in 1611, Artemisia was hanging out in her bedroom when she noticed Agostino Tassi lingering near her doorway. When she no doubt said hello and questioned his presence there, he replied that he was simply admiring a painting on her bedroom wall. But very quickly after that, things escalated. According to Artemisia herself, Tassi forced himself into her room and came onto her, making direct and unwanted offers of sex. When she balked, Tassi grew desperate and wasn't about to let his opportunity slip away. I'll let Artemisia Gentileschi's voice continue the narrative. About the next moments, Artemisia recounted, quote, "He then threw me onto the edge of the bed, pushing me with a hand on my breast, and he put a knee between my thighs to prevent me from closing them. Lifting my clothes, he placed a hand with a handkerchief on my mouth to keep me from screaming," unquote. And with that, Tassi proceeded to rape her. She continued, quote, "I felt a strong burning and it hurt very much, but because he held my mouth, I could not cry. However, I tried to scream as best as I could. I scratched his face and I pulled his hair, and before he penetrated me again, I grasped his penis so hard that I even removed a piece of flesh," unquote. But she couldn't stop him. After Tassi finally let her go, Artemisia rushed to a nearby drawer and pulled out a knife, screaming to Tassi, quote, "I'd like to kill you with this knife because you have dishonored me." And he basically mocked her by opening up his coat and proclaiming, quote, "Here I am," as if he were just right there, available to be attacked. Artemisia did move ahead and attempted to attack Tassi, but he shielded himself, sustaining only a very minor wound. If Tassi hadn't protected himself, Artemisia later noted that she might very well have killed him. What happened next is terrible in its own right. Distraught at the assault she just experienced, Artemisia was crying and hysterical, and Tassi attempted to settle her down. How did he do this? He grabbed her hand and promised to marry her. Never mind that he was already married, but that's another tale altogether. With this promise, Artemisia did find herself slightly pacified, so much so that she was able to continue a physical relationship with her assailant. As she later noted, quote, "I did feel calmer, and with this promise, he induced me later on to yield lovingly, many times to his desires, since many times he also promised and reconfirmed that promise to me," unquote. Artemisia was young, very young, and was assaulted and most likely not thinking clearly due to the shock of the circumstance, and she assumed that Tassi was telling the truth when he promised to make good on the loss of her virginity by making her a respectable wife. Alas, though, he never did. And with this broken promise, in came Orazio Gentileschi to the rescue, filing a charge in 1612 that Agostino Tassi raped his daughter months prior. And with that, began another nightmarish phase in Artemisia's life, as she endured a 7-month-long court battle that put Artemisia herself on trial practically as much as Tassi. The trial of Agostino Tassi lasted a grueling 7 months and included hundreds of hours of witness examinations and testimonies from friends, tenants, and artists to build a picture of the Gentileschi household and Artemisia's relationship with Tassi himself. In the court transcripts, Artemisia was depicted as a shy teenager who rarely left the house, while Tassi was painted as possibly even worse than he actually was. Exhibit A, several testimonies accused him of murdering his wife years before, something which Tassi did not do, but still made little attempt to disprove. This insouciant attitude was also directed at the rape charges, which he similarly did not attempt to deny. That being said, the trial still dragged on, and with it was dragged Artemisia herself. For example, to ensure that she was being truthful in her accusations, the judges ordered the use of a torture device called a sibil, wherein her fingers were tightly tied with ropes and pulled together painfully. The idea being that if someone was lying, they wouldn't want to subject themselves to such pain. But Artemisia Gentileschi remained defiant as she stared down her rapist who sat across the courtroom from her. She repeated her testimony again and again as court officials pulled the ropes tighter. Eventually, the judge found her to be honest and found Tassi guilty of his crime. He was sentenced to 5 years as a galley slave. But here's another infuriating part. Agostino Tassi never served any time. He was a highly sought-after artist, after all, and one of his main clients was Pope Innocent X, who once described Tassi as one of the only men who had never disappointed him. Innocent, too, noted that he appreciated the fact Hasse had embraced his sinful acts and had not attempted to deny his wrongdoings. That was grace. And thus, Innocent came to Tassi's rescue, and so Tassi kept his status as a free man, enjoying a long career in Rome while Artemisia Gentileschi fled Rome 2 days after the trial and relocated, purportedly for marriage purposes, to Florence. All of the direct quotations I've shared from Artemisia, especially pertaining to the actual account of the attack, are part of the public documentation of what followed from the trial of Agostino Tassi, and are all available to read and be discussed. I got my transcription from art historian Mary Gerard's 1989 masterpiece on Artemisia herself. It's hard to read. It's probably, in many ways, even harder to hear someone like me narrate it out loud. But I think it's important to share the words from a victim or survivor, and to hear the testimony of those wrongs that were done to their minds and their bodies. And so, though this has been more graphic in its telling than most Art Curious episodes, I feel very strongly that sharing this knowledge will lead to a greater understanding and even greater appreciation of Artemisia's masterwork, her Judith Slang Holofernes, completed around 1620. But even today, it isn't an easy or pretty work of art to behold, and its explicit ties to Artemisia's violent assault come to light after this break.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
If you're anything like me, there is so much that interests you because there's still so much out there to learn about. Which is why I love my subscription to The Great Courses Plus. This is a streaming service that gives you unlimited access to learn from some of the most passionate, engaged experts around the world. I recommend watching their video series on the fundamentals of photography. I love to travel, and so I want to make sure that my pictures, which are my favorite souvenirs, are the very best that they can be. So I like the fundamentals of photography, where I can learn how to take better pictures from a National Geographic photographer. They offer great tips and tricks like how to use lighting or better frame your photos, how to crop things properly, and how to get the best kind of image no matter what type of camera you're using. And my listeners can start enjoying this and any of the wonderful courses from The Great Courses Plus for free. Now, The Great Courses Plus has thousands of videos across every different topic you can imagine, not just art and art history, but music, science, human nature. You can learn even how to manage stress or how to become a better cook. Plus, you can watch anytime, anywhere, or just listen along like a podcast on The Great Courses Plus app. And as one of my listeners, you can enjoy Fundamentals of Photography and any of their other lectures for free. So start your free trial today by going to my special URL. Sign up at thegreatcoursesplus.com/art. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/art.
I love me a really nice wrap dress. I just love them, and I have been wearing them for years as my curator attire. But as much as I love a great Diane von Furstenberg wrap dress, I really don't want to pay full price. Which is why I love using Poshmark, which allows me to shop from millions of closets all across America to find the very best deals. Poshmark has tons of brands to choose from. Everything from Louis Vuitton to Chanel, Lululemon, and J.Crew, and even kids' gear is available from practically every brand you can imagine. Now, you will not believe the deals that you can find on Poshmark. So I shopped around for those Diane von Furstenberg wrap dresses, and I found items that typically go for $400 or $500 being sold on Poshmark for $100 or $150. That is an amazing deal. Poshmark is the easiest way to buy and sell fashion items for men, women, and children. Even Halloween costumes are available on there. And to make things even simpler, you can download the Poshmark app and do all of your shopping straight from your smartphone. And do you have some goodies to sell? You can get in on the Poshmark action and open your own closet with them. And here's the great news. Listeners of Art Curious can get $5 off your first purchase. Just enter the invite code ARTCURIOUS. That's one word, ARTCURIOUS. Shop Poshmark today. Green Chef is a USDA-certified organic company that includes everything you need to easily cook delicious meals that you can feel good about. With Green Chef, it's easy to maintain a specialty diet and enjoy exciting new options because they have all kinds of meal plans for you to try, including paleo, vegan, vegetarian, keto, gluten-free, omnivore, and carnivore. I ordered keto for my first box, but it's easy for me to move over to vegetarian just by switching up my box whenever I want it. And with Green Chef's wide variety of organic ingredients, I feel really great about what I'm eating and how it got to my table. And that's because everything is hand-picked just for you and delivered to your door with ingredients in pre-measured, perfectly portioned packets and mostly prepped and ready for you. So this week I made dill roasted chicken with feta, which also included these amazing artichokes, some sauteed kale, and red bell pepper and olives, and it was a huge winner. I had intended to take a picture of it and all its gorgeous colors to post on my Instagram, but I ate it too fast, and I am not kidding. All that was left was an empty bowl because I ate every bite, and I am already dreaming of having something just like it again. And now you can enjoy Green Chef too. So for the incredible savings of $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/artcurious, one word. Try Green Chef today at a great rate, that's $50 off your first box, by going to greenchef.us/artcurious. Welcome back to Art Curious. After Artemisia's trial against Agostino Tassi was completed, she moved quickly to Florence, where she enjoyed significant success in the arts, even attaining a milestone when she became the first woman accepted into the Academy of Arts and Drawing. Surviving letters from this period record her successes and relationships within the Florentine art community as she worked diligently to produce commissioned paintings. But there was one work that she began fairly early in her sojourn to Florence, a painting that challenged her, flummoxed her, and called her back repeatedly as she worked on it over and over over the course of 7 years. The subject matter that Artemisia Gentileschi chose in her most famous painting was a tale that was millennia old, one that had been portrayed countless times by many artists before her, including an iteration made famous by her father's old pal, Caravaggio. It visually recounts a key moment from the apocryphal Old Testament Book of Judith. Judith was a daring Jewish widow who takes matters into her own hands to protect the Israelites from a marauding army of Assyrians, led by a fearsome general named Holofernes. Holofernes intended to kill the Israelites, and so the night before the purported battle, Judith sneaks into the general's tent and ingratiates herself to him, all while plying him with alcohol until he becomes so intoxicated that he falls asleep. And then, with the assistance of a handmaiden, Judith beheads Holofernes as he lay asleep. When the Assyrian army discovered the corpse of their general, the siege is called off and the army retreats, thereby ensuring the Israelites' safety and Judith's legend as a true biblical hero and all-around badass. It makes sense that Artemisia Gentileschi would find this such an intriguing subject matter for a painting. Angered by the fact that Tassi never faced true justice for his crimes against her, and embarrassed and humiliated by the rigors of the trial in Rome, no one could blame her for wanting to exact a little wish fulfillment via a safe biblical tale. But Gentileschi's final image was altogether shocking when it was first revealed, and shocking even now to modern-day viewers, because of a couple different reasons. But before we get into that, we need to describe how Judith was typically represented in visual art. For centuries, Judith was the epitome of the virtuous woman of God, the whole package. A gorgeous widow, unwilling to sully herself with a second marriage, God forbid, and who cared far more about the well-being of her people and her faith over her own personal safety. In famous Judith depictions by Renaissance greats Sandro Botticelli and Lucas Cranach the Elder, Judith is stylish and poised. And the only thing that really differentiates her from the other women in each artist's oeuvre is that she happens to have a severed head of a man either in her hands or close by, as in the Botticelli work. Something which sometimes causes art historical confusion, as Salome, the New Testament temptress who requested John the Baptist's head on the platter, is also depicted fairly similarly, if not slightly sexier. Anyhow, the point is this. Judith equals virtuous lady doing the dirty work for God and the greater good. And most of the time, the realities of the dirty work, i.e. the actual beheading of Holofernes, was really left off screen, so to speak. You just have the aftermath, that severed head, as evidence. But this changed with the dawn of the Baroque period in the late 16th and early 17th centuries. Baroque art was all about action and drama. Big contrasts between light and shadow, high emotion, big expression. Caravaggio himself was a master of this. And his own take on Judith from 1598 is one of the paintings that actually shows Judith in process of beheading the general, whose eyes are open in shock and mouth frozen in a scream as a spray of blood stains his pillow. But even here, Judith herself is all lithe and beautiful, and she's approaching her job with a delicacy that is at odds with her actions. All you can see is this teeny tiny little wrinkle in her forehead as she commits her murder. These are the traditional images of Judith that Artemisia inherited from art history, but she wasn't about to take the opportunity to create just another bland and proper Judith. No, her heroine was one born from her own grief and anger. Her Judith is all fury and muscle. On the right side of her canvas, Artemisia paints Judith, clad in a gold gown, caught between the shadows and the action of beheading Holofernes on the bed in front of her, held down by an equally young and determined handmaiden. Judith's dress slips down her left shoulder as crimson blood spurts from the neck of the slain general, and it gets everywhere, staining the sheets, spraying Judith's dress, and marring her hands as she holds the dagger tightly. What's fascinating is that Judith's face does not reflect the horror of the act. Instead, it's purposeful. It's focused. Her brow is furrowed, but with surety, not the delicate unease of Caravaggio's Judith. Artemisia knows what she's doing and why, and she is all in, conquering the overwhelming large body of Holofernes and soon to be victorious. For the first time, really, Judith is shown as an active, meaningful participant in the assassination story that made her a legend. And it ain't easy. For any other Judith murder scene, including that of Caravaggio, Judith and her maids are usually shown at somewhat of a distance from Holofernes, leaning back or away, or keeping themselves and their clothing pristine in the literal face of gore. But not Gentileschi's women. Both Judith and her maid have their sleeves rolled up, muscles flexing, using their combined strength as much as Judith's weapon to inflict that fatal blow. It's gruesome, and it's more realistic. And at the time, its depiction of violence at the hands of women painted by a woman was terrifying. And to many, it just wasn't okay. As if this work wasn't surprising and powerful enough, there's another element that brings it to an even more fascinating level. Artemisia Gentileschi's Judith has stood out to keen-eyed viewers and art historians throughout the years because she looks a little familiar. In fact, Judith bears a striking resemblance to the artist herself. And upon further inspection, Holofernes looks familiar too, as he also resembled a real live person. I don't need to tell you who, as I'm sure you've already guessed. Yup. Artemisia appears to have modeled her Holofernes upon the visage of Agostino Tassi, her rapist. Now, it is not unusual for artists, especially women, to use their own bodies as the model for female figures, given the fact that studying from the nude model was forbidden to women for most of Western art history on into the modern era. But combining her image with that of Tassi is no accident, and it catapults her painting into being more than a painting. It becomes a form of autobiography, Under the guise of quote-unquote safe subject matter from the Bible as vetted by visual artists for centuries, Artemisia Gentileschi was able to work out her complicated feelings towards her past in a way that remarkably mirrors the Judith legend itself. Tassi, a powerful and wealthy male, came to her and violently took her honor, quote-unquote, similar to how Holofernes, a wealthy and powerful male, came to Judith's home and attempted to ransack her city. And on canvas, at least, Artemisia was able to exact control over the outcome of the situation in a way that just wasn't possible in real life. Remember her own testimony about the events of the attack, as she outlined during the trial. She rushed to a drawer, brandished a knife, and yelled to Tassi, quote, "I'd like to kill you with this knife because you have dishonored me," unquote. Tassi, of course, protected himself, and Artemisia ended her recounting with one simple statement, quote, "Otherwise, I might have killed him." Judith slaying Holofernes represents a different ending for Artemisia Gentileschi, an ending that shows women as victorious over powerful men and justice being served. Artemisia's attacker may not have served his sentence, but Artemisia was not going to let the world forget her abuse. She would not stay silent, and her bravery and dedication to making her voice heard loud and clear is still affecting to us today. Next time on the Art Curious podcast, we're discussing the delayed shock and scorn about a self-portrait, indeed. And that's coming up in 2 weeks. Don't miss it. Thank you for listening to the Art Curious podcast. This episode was written, produced, and narrated by me, Jennifer Dassel, with additional writing and research help by Kelsey Breen. Our theme music is by Alex Davis at alexdavismusic.com. Our logo is by Dave Rainey at daveraineydesign.com. And social media help is by Emily Crockett. Our production and editorial services are provided by Kabunki. Video, content, ideas. Learn more at kabonki.com. The Art Curious podcast is sponsored primarily by Anchor Light. Anchor Light is a creative space founded with the intent of fostering artists, designers, and craftspeople at various stages of their development. Home to artist studios, residency opportunities, and exhibition space, Anchor Light encourages mentorship and the cross-pollination of skills among creatives in the Triangle. Please visit anchorlightraleigh.com. The Art Curious podcast is also fiscally sponsored by VAE Raleigh, a 501c3 nonprofit creativity incubator. This means that you can donate to the show and it is fully tax deductible. Follow the donate links on our website for more details, where you can also find images, information, contact details, and links to our previous episodes. That site is artcuriouspodcast.com. We are also on Twitter and Instagram at artcuriouspod. Lastly, if you love Art Curious and want even more of what we do, you'll be thrilled to know that I am available for lectures, live podcast events, and other gigs. So contact me if you'd like me to visit your museum, college, university, or elsewhere. Check back in 2 weeks as we continue to explore the unexpected, the slightly odd, and the strangely wonderful in these shocking works of art history.